Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 438 of the Roguecast, recorded October 31st, 2023. Spookiness is a two-way street.
Hello and welcome to the spookiest podcast of the year.
Yes. Everything will be spooky today. It's Halloween.
It's Halloween.
And if we're talking about an Archie comic...
It'll be a spooky Archie comic.
No. We will give it a spooky angle.
Oh.
They don't even have to make it spooky. We'll make it spooky.
It's Halloween, so anything we say is spooky. Like, when I said hello and welcome to the podcast, that was spooky.
Hear it as... Spooky hello.
Spooky hello, yes.
Spooky welcome to the
spooky
podcast.
Spooky welcome to the podcast. Yes, exactly.
I think should just be understood.
We are bringing a little bit of the spooky, but you, the listener, must bring your own spooky.
Yes.
Yes.
Spookiness sure. Is a two-way street.
Spookiness is a two-way street. spooky has lost all meaning now.
Yes. Now it's just a couple of blobby syllables next to each other.
So, this is
Halloween, though.
This is our Halloween podcast. Happy Halloween. We all love Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween.
We will, of course, all stop watching horror movies immediately. Right, you can only watch them.
That's not going to happen,
you know. But I am ready for a change up though. Like I'm ready for November to hit and try to play
time for Hallmark movies.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm going to sneak a couple more in tonight.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's still Halloween.
It's still Halloween tonight.
You're not sneaking it in, right. Nick. Don't think you're subversive.
That's right.
Everybody's doing it.
You're not spooky subversive.
But I know, Nick, you watch a lot of movies. So if, like, next week you're like, I have a little bit of Halloween left in me, you might still watch six movies.
True.
Like,
true.
I decided to marathon all the screens.
Well, I'll start off by talking about games this week. We are starting, it's getting to be Christmas shopping season. We're starting our last few Kickstarters that are, like, squeaking out before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. From, like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago that we ordered them.
Yeah.
But we got the Yucatan Kickstarter bundle, which is the main game of Yucatan, the 5-6 player expansion, the solo version, the playmat, and the sleeves. You get that whole bundle. And this is the same guy who designed Kemet, which was the Egyptian sort of war game.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is like the, you're a Mayan god, and you're trying to do what Mayan gods do.
I haven't thought of myself as a Mayan god.
I know, you're always talking about it.
And I do wear the headdress, even if it's cultural appropriation.
It's not great.
I know it's not a good look,
but
listen,
if you
were reincarnated Quetzalcoatl, maybe you'd wear it too, but you're not.
That's true, I'm not.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, this sounds like a super cool package. It is just you get it all.
You get it all.
It's one big package.
Yes, well, I mean, there's like three boxes, but yes, you get one big package.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got a few of those. Munchkin Scooby-Doo came out, for those who like the Munchkin or the Scooby-Doo or both.
Oh, I actually missed that. That's pretty cool.
Especially if you like both, because it's both.
Yes, it is.
It's both. We got from Kobold Press Deep Magic Volume 1 and 2. This is their two magic books. Deep Magic Volume 1's been out for a while. Volume 2 is new one.
This is role-play stuff for D&D, right?
For D&D, yes. So it's like, all told, it's like almost 1,000 new spells, plus 2 new classes and all, you know, different types of magic systems, that kind of thing. So if you want more magic in your D&D, and Kobold Press has a really good reputation, they do good stuff.
There's a regular edition and there's a limited edition.
There's a fancy edition, yes. Art Project, which is a new from The Op, which was USAopoly.
Mm-hmm.
This is their a sort of heisty game. It's like a museum heist game.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's ever seen, what's the movie? Art Heist Man?
Oh, Thomas Crown Affair?
Thomas Crown Affair should be able to get into that.
But the art is like it's A period, R period, T period. Yes. So it's an acronym for something.
I don't know. Art Response Thieves.
Art Response Thieves.
Pretty solid. Randy, you're very quick on the uptake with acronyms. I just sit there thinking, I go through like 10 different things that start with A, and I'm like, aggressive, and then you're like on your third, fourth iteration.
Here's the trick. You got to be okay with spouting nonsense.
Just bore whatever
nonsense out. Yep.
Yeah.
And also, some people get really good gifts, like you know, great hair or like the ability to do like complicated math.
And you are
acronyms. I'm acronym lad. Yeah. I would be rejected from Legion of Superheroes. They'd be like, Superboy actually has pretty good acronyms already, and he can fly. So
maybe you could one day give your life for the Legion, though, and get one of the statues.
Yes. Acronym lad, he went out like a hero.
That's right.
By which we mean the hero dial.
Or AG.
Dot E. Dot H. Dot E. Dot R. Dot O. He ended really organically. We got the My Little Pony deck building game Collision Course, which lets you play My Little Ponies with Transformers or G.I. Joe.
Finally, they can face
off. At last, Starscream can murder My Little Ponies.
Pinkie Pie,
there you go.
Pinkie Pie will destroy Ironhide. and Gung Ho, she don't care.
She doesn't take no prisoners.
Gung Ho and Pinkie Pie will be married.
He will wear his formal marine dress.
Yes, and she, being a horse, will be nude.
Be nude. No, what do you call those little capy things they drape on horses?
I don't know. Dressage.
It's a bridle.
That's the thing.
Gung Ho will be wearing the bridle. We know what kind of guy Gung Ho is. He will be the one in the bridle.
But people know what I mean.
Saddle? Is that
a horse cape?
A horse cape.
You know, like in parades and stuff.
Yes.
Sometimes they wear horse capes.
Gung Ho will drape her in her finest horse cape, and then they shall be wed.
A nice white lace horse cape.
Then there's the
traditional marine horse wedding.
And then there'll be the Transformers deck building game came out with Clash of the Combiners, which is all the Devastator and all the other
ones
that form into bigger Transformers.
The Gestalt Transformers.
Okay, yeah. So that's cool. That's also the deck building games, which I need to play. I've got the G.I. Joe deck builder. I've not played it yet. Renegade makes good games. I like deck builder. I like G.I. Joe.
Do we assume that this follows like the baseline stuff of a deck builder with a buyer's row and all that sort of stuff?
Yep, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we should try that. We like G.I. Joe. We like deck builders. How hard can it be?
Perhaps sometime we shall play this game.
Yeah, but unfortunately it's spooky season.
Yes, it is spooky season, and therefore only time for marine and horse weddings.
Yes.
As is the tradition in the fall. That's right. You really don't want to have that in the spring. It's got to be a fall event.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about comics for, technically this is the 1st of November.
It's true.
But it is sort of a fifth week, which means it is sort of a weird, lighter week, although Marvel's got a bunch of first issues.
Yeah.
But it is sort of a lighter week. Let's start with an unusual thing from Vault Comics. They are a small press company. They've probably been around like 15 years at this point. They've got a bunch of trades and stuff.
Yeah.
They are doing something unusual. They are launching their new book, Unnatural Order, by Christopher Yost, who you may know as a writer on The Mandalorian, and
I thought he was like involved in Star Wars Rebels.
He's done. I think he still sees some Marvel shows too. He didn't write for Loki or anything, did he, Nick?
I think he might have.
I think he might have too.
Maybe.
Yeah,
he did Wolverine the X Men.
Yeah.
He's Wolverine the X Men cartoon. Yeah, one of the really good iterations.
He's done a ton of animation and also a ton of live action stuff that people like, and he has done some good comics. Well, he's coming back to comics. With artist Val Rodriguez and doing a book called Unnatural Order that is sort of it's kind of a D&D party in some ways.
But a little more rooted in rooted in historical concepts.
Right.
Like it's in ancient Rome.
There's a big evil druid, but they're not in Rome, right? They're somewhere else.
No, it's like just that era.
Yeah.
And there's this evil druid and the Roman legionnaire type dude.
Sorry, they're in Londinium under druid rule. So this is like an alternate history kind of thing.
Oh,
and
okay.
There's an evil druid that has taken over. And our heroes are a band of a disgraced Roman legionnaire, a barbarian type.
He's specifically a Viking dude.
A Celtic woman warrior. An archer of some kind.
There's a thief, I think. One of them's a thief. Yeah, maybe that is the archer person.
Yeah, she may be the archer person.
But
they are basically trying to take down this druid. They're like the resistance.
And there's a sort of notable twist at the end that's probably going to affect where this premise goes. But they did something unique with this book.
Yeah. But before we get to that, I want to say that I really like the barbarian in this one. The barbarian is kind of a goofy Minsk and Boo Conan type guy.
Yep. He reminds me of the Norse guy in Ghosts.
Yes, the Norse guy in Ghosts as well. Yes, yeah.
Ghosts.
TV show, sitcom.
Oh, okay.
Very good.
It is very good. So yes, the unusual. So that's the pitch for the comic, which I think we all quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
Really nice artwork. But the pitch for this is it's free.
Yeah,
We gave it to most of our subscribers. We gave you a copy, And we have, if you buy any single issue this week, you can get a copy for free while supplies last.
Yep.
And all we ask is that if you decide you want to read more, let us know so we know how to order on number two. But yeah, try the first issue for free. And
that's a rarity. If you like anything ranging from like sort of like from Lord of the Rings to like 300, it's got a little bit of that in it. And any sort of like fantasy or historical action stuff, give this a try. Gladiator, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So the big things Chris used, I had to look up because I was trying to remember.
Yep.
He co-created X-23.
Right.
And
I remember that back in the day.
He did write on The Mandalorian. He also wrote Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok. That was the one. Yeah, yeah. That was something notable. You know what else this reminds me of, Dave? Do you remember that Valiant book that was about the Roman legionnaire fighting, like, the druids?
He's like a detective guy.
Yeah, that was a good book.
Yeah, that
reminds me of that.
That was...
I can't remember the name of it.
Like an English writer, like Peter Milligan or one of those guys?
It might have been. It might have been.
It was one of those guys who I associated, I think, back in the day with Hellblazer.
Yeah.
And if it was Peter Milligan, like, she did Shade the Changing Man and stuff. But anyway.
It's out of print, but it was really good, and this reminds me of that.
That was one of their better books, yeah.
All right. We've got several new number ones from Marvel. We've got Ultimate Universe number one, which is... Jonathan Hickman just did Ultimate Invasion, which is a four-issue mini.
Yep.
This is launching the Ultimate... relaunching the Ultimate Universe... Which apparently is Earth 6160.
I believe that's correct.
It's like the Marvel Universe, but 10 times.
Yes.
I believe we can say this isn't too revealing, that it is not just a, like, all the old Ultimate heroes you know are just back or something like
no,
that.
It's a completely new...
It's a new Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Because the Ultimate Invasion, the pitch of that was that the Maker, the evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe, had basically, and this is explained in Ultimate Universe as well, he knew all the heroic origins, so he went and stopped them.
Yeah.
Like, he either stopped them from being heroes or stopped them from getting powers.
Correct.
And as a result, he was basically able to sort of take over the world in kind of a Mark Miller Wanted-esque style, where the villains won and nobody knows the heroes existed.
But that didn't stick.
But as this starts, Dr. Doom and Tony Stark, wearing the Iron Lad armor...
Yep.
Are trying to put together the Avengers because they know that's what's supposed to happen. They're trying to undo what the Maker did, and their first recruit is Thor, prisoner of Asgard. And it's a pretty cool sequence.
It is.
It's a good opener. And they're also going to deal with Captain America. They have a fight with a sort of a notable hero/villain that is the Maker's agent. And we're going to sort of see them rebuild their Ultimate Universe while the Makers and his allies are working against them. And there's a tease at the end for Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Black Panther, and Ultimate X-Men, and revealing the creative team. So if you want to try the new Ultimate stuff, this is your jumping on point for that.
This, like the original Ultimates, is essentially their Avengers, right? That's what it's going to roughly tumble out to be?
This is just a one-shot.
Oh, okay.
The Ultimates are not coming out until 2024.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Spider-Man is in January.
Spider-Man is the first, and if you've seen the news this week about Spider-Man, basically it is going to be...
Is this called Ultimate Universe?
This is called Ultimate Universe. It's just a one-shot.
Okay. Yeah.
It's Hickman's launch. Hickman is writing the Spider-Man, which Marco Cicchetto on art.
Yep.
And the teaser we've seen is Peter Parker with Mary Jane and their two like teenage kids.
Right.
So people seem very happy that we're going to have at least one universe where Peter and Mary Jane are together and have kids and have not been separated by double divorce.
Maybe Marvel will look to that and see how it takes and then consider undoing the stupid Mephisto thing.
Maybe so. Spider-Boy, which Dan Slott introduced, gets his own book this week. He has been the center of sort of the Spider-Man story he's been writing. Spider-Boy is like a teenage sidekick. He is one of the interesting things. He was erased from time somehow.
Yeah.
So like nobody remembers him, but he remembers being like Spider-Man's sidekick. He knows a lot of these characters that don't know him, and they sort of give him a little bit of an origin here. They reveal that he was made up by a sort of Dr. Moreau-esque villain who doesn't remember creating him.
Because he's an actual like monster.
He's a Spider-Boy.
He's a Spider-Boy.
It's pretty fun. It's cute. It's you know, it's got a little bit of the goofiness to it. If you don't like goofy Spider-Man, you're not gonna like this.
If you
like puns, you're gonna love Spider-Boy. There is White Widow, the new solo book for what's her name? Yelena.
Yep.
Yelena Belova, the second Black Widow, is now White Widow. She's an assassin.
As Billy Idol once sang, it's a nice day for a White Widow.
Yes. This is her solo book, no doubt spinning out of Florence Pugh's sort of great star turn as a character in Black Widow. And then, if you like sharks, we got It's Jeff, the Jeffverse.
Jeff the Land Shark gets his gets another one shot.
Yeah, yeah. These always seem to do well for us. It's kind of cute adventures of a little goofy land shark from Gwynpool, right? Is that what we determined?
Yeah, yes. He showed up in Gwynpool, West Coast Avengers, things like that.
Yep.
Kelly Thompson writes this. The wonderful artistic talents of Guri Uhuru.
Yep. Guri always, yep. always comes through.
Who did that awesome Power Pack mini back yep. in yep. the day. Yep. Does amazing artwork here.
DC has a few this week. DC actually did kind of their skip week. There's not a lot of regular stuff, but there are some specials.
Yep.
There's the Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom special, which is tying into the upcoming movie.
Yep. Right. It bridges the gap between Aquaman 1 and Aquaman 2.
That probably explains what happened to Mera.
Yep. She's in the movie.
Yeah. There's the Supergirl special, which it bridges the gap between the last Supergirl special and the next Supergirl special. if you like Supergirl, there's Supergirl special. There's the Batman Catwoman Gotham War finale, which we've been reading that. That's a short Batman Catwoman crossover, two issues of each and
this
a couple
one shots.
This is
the bookend to it. This is the big, lots of explodo and punches.
Yep. It sort of escalates to its big finale. Mm-hmm. One of the things I liked that they did in this is the tying together of Vandal Savage and
Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul. I thought that was a neat idea, the two immortals sort of.
Yeah, so a link between the Lazarus Pits and the weird meteor that gave Vandal Savage his caveman brains.
Caveman brains. He had caveman strength. He was a caveman.
Yep.
But now he has caveman brains.
And caveman longevity.
And caveman
actually
longevity.
Actually, I guess more like he has man-man brains.
He has man-man brains, caveman strength, and non-man longevity.
Yeah, that's obviously.
Yeah. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
Sure. Decipher that one.
On my best days, I hope to have man-man intelligence.
Yes, I wake up some days hoping for man-man intelligence, but usually it's caveman.
Caveman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another caveman
and
day.
And occasionally non-man. We've got Canary Number 1. That is the new Dark Horse book from Scott Snyder and Dan Panosian. This is all tied in. This is all part of his, Substack?
Yeah, Substack.
So these were all digital first. So these issues tend to be basically like two chapters worth of a four chapter story or six chapter story.
Right. They're pretty dense with story and Scott Snyder like people I think maybe most people know him best from his Batman run that where he created the Court of Owls.
I really feel like this
or
is
maybe American Vampire.
I feel like this is Scott Snyder by way of Joe Lansdale in a lot of ways.
I get
it's
that.
Got that kind of
it's supernatural western.
Yeah,
it is spectacular art by Dan Panosian.
Yeah, I was looking at that from a distance and I was like, that is some of the best I've seen from Panosian.
If you like supernatural western at all as a genre. If you like, you're going to want to check out this art. If nothing else, it's interesting.
But the story I actually quite liked as well. So okay. I think
why is it called Canary Nick?
Because that's
Canary in a coal mine.
Yep, Canary in a coal mine. There is a mine that may or may not be bleeding evil into the surrounding areas, and causing people to turn to violence.
And the people can use their man-man brains to stop it.
And it focuses on a detective that made a name for himself back in the day. He's kind of at the end of his reign a little bit. He's a little older, and he's once again called to action.
Okay. And the movie version will be played by Gene Hackman.
He's a little younger than
he would be if Gene Hackman were not retired.
But he's got a cool bandana that has a coffin on it. I think is very cool.
Face coffins.
They should sell that.
Yeah, they probably will.
I mean, they did with Something Is Killing with Children.
That's
true. We just need a pandemic to return so that we can make that fashionable again.
That seems a little extreme, but
I'll think on it.
All right. there's a Boom book called The Space Between, which I don't think any of us had a chance to read.
Nope.
But looks pretty, as of all Boom books.
Yep.
And then there's a couple graphic novels. The Spider-Man Deadpool series gets recollected as a Modern Epic collection. These Modern Epics are a pretty good deal. It's like, I think it's only $45, but you get like 20 issues.
Yeah.
They're a good deal.
They are dense with stuff, and you get all the little side stories and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you complaining about?
If you like Spider-Man and Deadpool together, you're not anyone in this room.
Quite the pitch, right?
Maybe Nick.
No, I don't even like them together. I like Deadpool and Spider-Man separate.
But you might be one of the 95% of other comics readers.
The Merc with the Mouth, the Spider with the Mouth.
The Merc with the Mouth, the Spider with the Spider. The American Rhythm Out of the Spider with ears.
Eventually we'll build a whole person.
They all got their thing. There's the, yes, there's the Thunder God with feet, which is from Quentin Tarantino's Thor. And then there is the Daredevil by Lobensale Gallery Edition. A few years back.
This was Daredevil Yellow, is the project.
These were what, like 20 years back, I guess we decided.
Yeah, 2001. It probably spanned about 5 or 6 years between the making of four of them.
But Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale did these books that were...
The color series is what
they called it. Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, Captain America White, and
Hulk Gray. Yep.
And they're like early days. They're usually narrated by like a love interest of the character. In this case, was Karen Page.
Drawn very much to reflect the era they were created in. So like Spider-Man kind of looked like, and all of them looked like in the 60s.
Yep. And they got this sort of watercolory, beautiful, sort of painty look. The gallery edition of this is spectacular looking. It's really, really pretty.
Yeah, I always think of this as having some of Jeff Loeb's best writing and Tim Sale's best art when they're definitely complementing each other it. So, and I think of them all, I would say Daredevil Yellow is my favorite.
I think I would agree with that, actually. And I really like Spider-Man
with
Blue.
With Spidey a close second.
Yeah.
But Daredevil is the best one.
Agreed. Only one of those has the owl in it, and the owl is the best villain.
I mean, that's fair. But if you've never read this, this is a great format. Honestly, if I didn't own it in hardcover already, I'd be very tempted to pick this up.
It's cool looking.
That's comics for the week. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about a little bit of news, and then a whole bunch of horror movies, and that kind of thing. Just a little bit of news this week before we dive into topics. And first of all, the Daredevil show. I don't think we've talked about this, but the Daredevil Born Again show had a little trouble.
And this is the Disney Plus show that's people were very pleased to initially hear that stars who's the dude who played him in the Netflix
Charlie Cox.
Show, yep. Charlie Cox.
Yep. And in fact, Vincent D'Onofrio is still going to be the Kingpin. Yep.
Right. But it's still going to be kind of a rethink, right?
So, yes, it is new. It was being headed by Chris Ord and Matt Corman. I don't know who those people are, but they departed. Apparently, they reviewed the footage, and there are rumors that, like, yeah, he isn't even Daredevil in the first episode. Like, it's all courtroom drama.
I mean, that's one thing to have done maybe in the Netflix stage.
Yeah.
But I think here, especially with the seemingly more up-tempo Matt, you kind of want to let him be...
So they fired everybody.
So they fired everybody.
Yeah.
Probably for the best, I'm going to guess here. But they did announce they've hired a new showrunner. Their new showrunner is... what's his name?
Isn't it the Punisher guy?
It is the Punisher guy. It is Dario Scardapane. Made-up name.
Yeah,
Clearly made-up name. He did Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan over on Prime, and he did the Punisher, and he's a new showrunner.
That was the Netflix Punisher.
Yep. And then Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who are the directing team behind... they were directing episodes of Loki Season 2 and some indie genre thrillers, and they are coming in to direct the last second half.
And they work well with Marvel.
They also directed two episodes of Moon Knight.
It's so weird, though. It seemed like the vibe to this was going to be the kind of like classic swashbuckler Daredevil, and then we saw some of that in the She-Hulk show. But they brought in the guy who made one of the most grim, dark Netflix ones of them all with the Punisher.
Yeah.
It was widely liked. I never finished it.
Me neither.
I never even watched it, but I hear it was good. I have no reason to doubt that it was good.
I'm a little worried because what I wanted was the fun. I hope that fun Daredevil isn't relegated just to She-Hulk.
Right.
I want the fun Daredevil too.
Right.
I don't want just grim and gritty Daredevil.
Nobody wants the fun Daredevil.
I want fun Daredevil.
I mean, Mark Waid's recent run was in that vein and did very well. Like,
there's
I think
some grimdark
was...
in that too.
There was, but nobody would say like the whole thing was grimdark.
No.
It was definitely the swashbuckler Daredevil.
Didn't that open with like a wedding that he?
He went and like a masher, he kissed the bride.
He did.
It was like a mob wedding, and there was like he saved people, but he did. He did steal a kiss.
Didn't he later sleep with that? That was a different mobster's wife. In that run,
yeah, but you know that's just Daredevil.
Actually, that was in Zdarsky's run. Mark Waid had him chastely kiss a woman at a wedding, and then Zdarsky came in. And he's like, "Oh, is that we're doing.
Yeah, and you're like, I think you've misunderstood.
He's like, no, that's General's thing. He sleeps with mobsters' wives. No, that's not a thing. That's not.
So I'm guessing with the Disney Plus thing, if they manage to sort of get this right on the track, then the decision, you know, to like drop the other episodes and stuff like that and go with this will look brilliant.
Yep.
But if it fails, people will like be like, oh, this was doomed for a while.
We should have seen the right Edgar Wright cut.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, they also isn't. They're going to use some of the footage from the show. They're just going to intercut. What I imagine is they'll still use some of the courtroom stuff they shot, because that's not a bad idea.
Sure,
but they'll probably intercut some Daredevil, you know, fighting people and sleeping with mobsters' wives.
Probably. Yep.
Your Honor, I ask for a recess so I can sleep with a mobster's wife.
Granted.
Only if you can fight the gladiator.
First you must fight Bullseye in my courtroom, then you may sleep with a mobster's wife, and then and only then may you make your closing argument.
Then I'm like, this Daredevil episode has everything. It's perfect. They finally got what I love about Daredevil.
And then it's got a Howard the Duck post-credits.
Blorco.
Okay. There are some horror sequels got announced. The newest one is the sequel to It Follows called They Follow, which is going to take place 10 years after the original movie. Did any of us love It Follows? I think we're all sort of like, it was okay.
I liked it. I don't remember a ton about it.
Nick and our spectrum loved
it. Yeah. I hated it.
And I guess I'm the middleman
in
this one.
Yeah.
It was like a little indie horror movie from, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that.
The premise was really interesting.
Yeah, it had a sort of, it was like being stalked by, like, the girl from The Ring, but you would transfer the curse to other people through sexual contact.
Yeah, it was a riff on STIs.
Right. But there was a little bit more to it than that. Like, I don't want to just say it was like, that's all there was to it. But, and it had a pretty good atmosphere. Like, it was pretty spooky. I definitely liked parts of it.
I did, too. I thought their rules for what exactly was going on were a little fuzzy.
Yep.
They got a little caught up in the metaphor and didn't tell a story, which happens in horror.
And then it didn't... I felt like the final act was a little bit like, well, we kind of know the rules to this. It's basically just like an invisible ghost that only you can see. Which, by the way, that is scary.
Yeah.
And it could look like anybody.
Look like anyone, yeah.
So you would just, like, be in it. Like, there'd be a crowd of people around you in it. And you suddenly notice somebody kind of weirdly is coming towards you.
Yeah.
And it maybe is even somebody you know.
Like grandma?
Right. But then, you know, something will set it off, or you're just like, this person would not be coming at me like that.
But it was almost zombie-like, because it didn't come at you fast.
Right.
It'd be like, it moved at a very deliberate pace. It's like that meme about the snail that if it touches you, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that. But
you're
sure.
Not familiar with this. Okay. You're familiar with the orangutan with a sword versus chickens in your car?
Nope.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know, did you see all your dumb memes? the idea was like a zombie, it was kind of inevitable. Eventually you got to sleep, you got to let your guard down, and it would get you.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would say the movie is for sure worth seeing for horror fans. Honestly, even if you end up on the side that's like, this is overrated.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a little indie darling at the time.
I think that's what it was. It was so buzzed about, and everyone was like, oh, this is the best horror movie, and I saw it, and I was like, this is all right.
Yeah, well, you know, what do you call it? Recently, was it Come to Me or something like that?
Talk to Me.
Was that movie for Nick? And,
sure.
And I heard a few other people had similar reactions.
We overhyped Nick on Talk to Me.
What's that?
We overhyped Nick on Talk to Me.
No, Nick is just so easily overhyped that our solid talk about it overhyped him.
So it's Nick's fault.
I am trying to throw Nick under the bus.
It was crap.
Nick, are you excited for They Follow?
Sure. I don't know. Is it going to be that
if there's multiple ghosts
post-apocalyptic
like follow you? That'd be interesting. If it's like just like you look around and there's like more than one. That's
gotta get
scarier.
Away from the triangulation of it.
It's like aliens.
Well, you know, I will say this. I wouldn't say more is always better, but when they invented the fast-running zombies, that did add this element to it. They were just so feral in 28 Days Later and the 2004
Dawn of the Dead. So the main lady is coming back, too? So did she survive?
I don't know. Nobody cares.
Yeah, who cares?
Even you're its biggest fan in the world, and you don't
That's
even
right.
know.
You are the biggest fan ever of this movie. You don't even know she's
sure.
But my point is that Fast-running zombies did turn out to actually change the dynamic.
It's true.
And that added something to it.
I hate so, fast-running zombies.
All right, but let me make my point. My point, Nick, is not whether you like it or not. The world has embraced them.
Yes.
And so that added something. We will see if the multiple followers, whatever rule has changed, whatever makes the curse different, will add to it.
Yeah.
Probably
not.
Nick, have you ever read the exchange between, I want to say Simon Pegg and, who's the guy who made Dead Set?
Oh, Charlie Brooker?
Charlie Brooker.
Oh.
A tongue-in-cheek mixture of admiration and shit-talking each other over fast-moving zombies in Dead Set.
That's Dead Set had fast-moving zombies.
Yes, and slow-moving zombies per Pegg's Shaun of the Dead. And they exchanged this in a series of, like, there were, like, letters to the editor somewhere. I forget what it was even the source. It wasn't just emails. It was somewhere published, I think.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, it is very entertaining. They actually both make good cases. They're both tongue is in cheek as they insult each other.
They're both really smart guys.
They're both really smart guys, so I recommend it.
Did the Brits invent the fast-moving zombies? Because it was 28 Days Later,
yeah.
And then Dead Set. I mean, yes, they're Dawn of the Dead as well, but I think...
Those all happened so close together, but I think 28 Days Later might have been first.
I think it was.
And then somebody out there, somebody being pedantic, is like, well, those weren't technically zombies. And I'm like, they acted so close...
Frankenstein's monster, whatever. Right.
They acted so close to zombies that in everyone's mind they're zombies.
They're zombies.
They might have. At the same time... If you just go back and watch, like, Night of the Living Dead and stuff like that, you will find that there were sometimes times when zombies move kind of quick.
That's right.
And you could probably find that on many films in between all of that stuff. But there was definitely a sea change when they started booking it.
Right. Yeah. Zombies in Zombieland are fast zombies, right?
Zombie. Or are they just regular? Yes, because I can picture them slow motion chasing, and they're at full run.
Are they at regular speed? There's regular speed zombies.
No, they are. They are fast.
Okay.
Somebody's running across a football field in that one of those like opening with all the funny smash cuts and stuff.
Yeah.
And also World War Z did them.
Fast zombies.
They were like so feral that they were crazy feral.
Yep.
I had to Google it because I was curious.
Yep.
So in 1980, the Italian film Nightmare City had the first fast zombies.
That doesn't count.
Why does that not count?
Because nobody was influenced by that movie.
Exactly.
It's got to have... I feel like...
They were.
I've never heard of it. I've got to at least have heard of it, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
There are, like if it was Fulci... Was it Fulci?
It probably was Italian.
I mean, he wasn't the only Italian zombie man.
No,
but
he's the only Italian
He is influential, so.
Let me see who it was.
Let's find out.
I don't know. Anyway, they're doing other sequels.
No, Umberto Lenzi.
Umberto Lenzi.
Oh,
yeah, you know.
I'm familiar with his work.
Are you? I'm not.
No?
Okay. another original, in addition to They Follow, there's going to be a Black Phone 2, which I don't know how that... I haven't seen Black Phone. It's been on my list to watch at some point.
I think you will probably like it.
Yeah, Black Phone's
good.
Can
you do a sequel to Black Phone?
This is, it's going to be trickier.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely be trickier.
This is based on a Joe Hill story book?
Yep, story.
It Short is. Story, it's think, right? Directed by Scott Derrickson and
Austin Zone Scott Derrickson? Or is it C. Robert Cargill, who's the writer? Who's
he's also the writer, and I think he is Austin.
I was not the biggest fan of Black Phone. And I think part of what I've realized is I don't really like Joe Hill's writing. I don't
I don't think you're a big Cargill fan, right? Like, you don't like Cargill's...
Sinister?
You like Sinister.
I like Sinister.
Oh, never mind.
I did like Sinister. Kind of hated Multiverse of Madness, which I believe was also...
No, that wasn't really...
That was just a mess.
That was Raimi. I mean, I think they started involved and then completely got taken away.
You didn't like Doctor Strange.
You didn't like Doctor Strange, which was them.
That's true, but I didn't dislike Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange has stuff I dig in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed Black Phone, but that was just kind of like... But, I like Ethan Hawke. I like...
me too.
I thought the kids were good.
I did not think the kids were good.
Sometimes Dave is wrong.
I think that I felt like their dialogue felt like scripted dialogue. there was some strong acting in it, but honestly, the guy playing their dad, who was a piece of shit, did some of the best acting. It's what's his name from Lost?
Oh, yeah. It's...
Matthew Fox.
No.
Scrawny dude who was like in the later ones with Lapidus and all those dudes.
Oh. Jeremy Davies.
Yes. Okay. All right. He's a good abusive dad, I guess I would say.
So they mention in this article that Barbarian is getting a video game adaptation.
Sure.
Which that's just weird. I mean, that's weird.
I kind of just want it to be. Honestly, I kind of want it to be a singular thing.
I agree.
I don't want a sequel to it, a prequel to it. It's fantastic as a standalone crazy rip-roaring movie.
Dave, how about a choose-your-own-adventure audio narrative?
There are many pages I wouldn't want to turn to in an adaptation of Barbarian.
Yeah, that's true. Also, M3GAN is getting a sequel called M3GAN 2.0, which, by the way, I'm disappointed it's not called M2GAN.
You know, Megan...
It's like a countdown, and then M1GAN...
I mean, M0GAN. There was no way they weren't going to do
Megan
a sequel.
Megan is built for it.
It's built for it, yes.
She...
Yeah. Unhinged, yeah. Like let loose.
Yep. 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 I think she's gonna like. I want like her arm to like weirdly telescope like some Ghost in the Shell thing where yes. Like suddenly it's 8 feet long.
Telescope, and I heard Inspector Gadget.
You're not thinking of Gum Gum.
Inspector Gadget versus Megan. Then this is the last one in there. Talk to Me is getting a sequel. Talk to Me, as in the number two.
Sure. Dumb name.
I'm not sure I want a sequel to Talk to Me.
There's
room for it.
There is room for it, but like it's another one of those.
Film a prequel?
I've heard that. Oh, okay. I've heard that.
About the two guys.
You know how it opens with? At like a party, Randy?
Yeah.
Supposedly they had already filmed something with that, but yeah. I don't know what's true and what's not. And
I don't either. Who knows anymore?
I don't need it anymore. I thought it was bad.
Would have some confidence in them. I think they'd have a shot at pulling it off, but I'd rather they did just an original horror movie. The model I like is the Jordan Peele model.
Yes.
Everything is different. You can look for certain similar qualities in them and certain style. They're always going to have some foot in social relevance.
Yep.
He's going to maybe echo something maybe that came from the past, but like put such a big spin on it, it becomes his own.
Sequel in vibes, but not in plot.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Although, if he were to reveal that Us and Get Out and what do you call it?
Nope,
all took place in the same world, that'd be weird.
It would be, but you know, for his sixth movie, I believe,
yes,
he should reveal that there's a secret shared universe you didn't know about.
Yes.
And
I want to talk to you about the Nope Initiative.
Get out. what's his name? Who survived the events of Get Out?
Yes.
He's like, we need you to fight the Hands Across America tethered.
Using this motorcycle and these wavy hand people that we fought aliens off with.
Yes. Boy, it's a weird series of events.
And
but,
here's your unhinged loose cannon co-parent, an unhinged chimp.
Didn't the weird craft thing, alien craft thing, and it like pull people up?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Like so, it could go after like big lines of tethered people.
That's true. We've captured an alien ship. We're gonna suck up all the tethered
and shoot them into the sun.
Jordan Peele, call us or don't. This is all terrible.
His agent needs to call him just to say, "I heard this shit podcast."
Listen, it's important to me that you never talk to anyone at Rogues Gallery.
No, what's going to happen is they're going to suck up all the tethered, and then it's going to spit all the scissors back down and kill a bunch of people as the scissors impale.
Yeah, and it's going to kill all the people who are having who are doing the brain swap of Get Out.
Actually, what's going to happen is all the tethered will have an influence on it, and then we'll find out, oh, there's actually an alien spaceship tethered version in the sewers.
Yes, and it's a good guy. And it's piloted by a chimp.
We're going to keep going back to the chimp thing.
The chimp was one of those normal things in Nope.
The chimp was killed.
But that doesn't mean all chimps were killed. Not the tethered chimp lived, Nick. The tethered UFO driving chimp is still
scissors.
Alive.
He's got
scissors. Actually, what's the opposite of scissors? What's
you know the opposite of scissors?
He has a spoon.
It's safety scissors.
It's safety scissors.
That's the exact opposite. Safety scissors don't cut
shit.
It is
true. They can't cut anything. They can't cut dirt. Children are like laughing you off. All right, so I think that covers our news. I guess
we should remember what we were talking about originally.
We should also. There's going to be a. There's going to be dragging us completely in another direction.
Yes.
We should talk about Matthew Perry.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's weird.
So this you know, sometimes when you see somebody passed, you find out in weird ways on social media.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine posted a thing. He's like, "Wow, the Grim Reaper's been working overtime," and he named Richard Roundtree, somebody else, and Matthew Perry. And I was like, "Wait, what?" And did a Google and found out Matthew Perry had died, age 54, not much older than me.
Right. And that is...
In his hot tub of drowning, there's every possibility it was drug-related, or they said it was a heart attack, which could have happened because of, you know...
Right.
He'd had a lot of struggles with drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that sort of came out in all this was something in his memoir where he said, he's like, look, I know when I die... everybody's going to talk about friends, and that's great. It's great to work. I'm glad, you know, people meant something. He's like, what I really hope people talk about is that, like... You know, if anyone was having addiction struggles, that I tried to help them, that I started the Perry House in Malibu for, you know, men who's struggling with addiction, and that basically he had been trying to help other people deal with the demons that he himself had grappled with for years.
Yeah.
And that is a cool thing to know, and you know, he didn't talk about it as much when he was alive, or it didn't get talked about.
Right.
But it is cool that it seems to be spreading around. People are like, oh, he was doing this thing we didn't even know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, I suppose it feels more impressive... when a person isn't always shouting to the heavens the name of their charity.
The thing is, I know and I understand that it's become cool to shit on Friends.
Yeah.
Like, Friends is pretty cringe in a lot of ways. But I started watching that when I was just out of college in the 90s. They were all about my age. They were all trying to figure life out. And that show resonated at the time.
Yeah.
And Chandler was probably my favorite character because he was funny and sarcastic. And
insecure
and like, yeah, he was just like, he was a really interesting and fun character. And Matthew Perry like really played him well.
Yeah,
like he was snarky, and I understand people are like, oh, Chandler's such a dick, but I'm like, no, he was actually, because Perry brought that humanity to him, he was mostly kind of funny, and you kind of felt, you're like, oh, he is using humor as a defense mechanism.
Yeah,
he had a tough life. He had a divorce that messed him up when he was a kid. And, you know, he's been dealing with that. And so there was a depth to that character for a sitcom.
Yeah.
And then he went on to do West Wing.
Yep, he was in a few episodes of West Wing.
And was he the lawyer? One of the lawyers, right? Wasn't he one of the lawyers?
He was.
And
yeah.
It was a great turn. And then he was the co-lead.
In Studio 60.
He was the one who had, he was the writer of the drug problem, or was
yes.
that? And so they were definitely, like, riffing on him and on Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say Sorkin's addiction issues are known, too, and I wonder if that's even a level on which they bonded.
He was the Sorkin stand-in, because Kirsten Chenoweth was religious girlfriend,
yep.
who was based on a character, a person that Sorkin dated.
Then he showed up on Good Wife and Good Fight.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he was the Republican...
that's right.
Governor-elect kind of Mike Restivo.
Yeah.
I didn't realize his post Friends career actually had some pretty high highs.
Oh yeah, he did a lot more outside of Friends. And then he did, you know, he had some goofy movies, the
Whole Nine Yards,
with Bruce Willis.
That was a great movie.
And Salma Hayek, that movie
Fools Rush In,
which was a very fun romantic comedy.
Yep.
He did a lot, and I think he got pension hold as, oh, he's the coked up friend, or. You know, he was the snarky guy,
mm-hmm.
and I think he did a lot more.
I still love Friends. It's got some things that have not aged well at all, but it's
like
still...
homophobia.
Yeah, like homophobia. there's a lot of gay panic
and
some transphobia. But they were in the 90s. They were trying to be gay friendly. It's just you look back at it now,
right.
and you're like, oh, that's not great.
Right.
But they were. They were trying to, like, address things.
But I think you can look back at any sitcom and from that era.
Even
or
Will
before.
And Grace, which is... Will and Grace was one of the reasons that you saw more gay characters on TV. But it's pretty cringe to look at.
It is.
And I never watched Friends. Huh? I've never seen one episode of it.
Really?
Really. I've seen bits and pieces. It seemed pretty funny. I was like, oh, these guys have a pretty good craft of jokes.
Yeah.
And I could tell, like, over a long run that they were... They had a mixture of what looked to me, at least, to be some successes and some failures at their more serious turns.
Yeah. Well, they had good writers and a talented cast, and they because they were the like number one show for a long time, they were able to bring in like Jon Favreau was a character for a big long arc.
Yep.
And like at one point, like Bruce Willis was on a show.
Tom Selleck
was on an arc. Brad Pitt did an episode.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of like big names that came in and did that show.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, and it's you know issues and stuff taken in stride. It was huge. I remember when Netflix got it.
Yeah, like, that was a big deal for them.
Like, and it did very well. So, but yeah, it's crazy when somebody dies that young.
Yeah.
That,
yeah, Richard Roundtree was like 80.
Right. He lived solid life. Solid yeah. life. But, yeah, 50 is no bueno.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Let's talk topics. Let's talk horror movies. Let's,
yay.
Let's, I want to talk about You Might Be the Killer. That's my only contribution. I watched it actually last week, but I was waiting for Nick and he didn't watch it yet.
And I failed.
So I'm going to spoil some things. Not a lot, but...
What is this movie's deal? I don't remember.
So this is a horror comedy that was like... It was like a Fantastic Fest offering a few years back. It is not streaming anywhere.
Yes.
Unless you have Spectrum. If you have Spectrum Cable, you can stream it on their sure. their network. So I bought the DVD used for $10 and I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
The deal with this is it stars Franz Kranz from
Dollhouse
and Cabin in the Woods.
Who was she in Dollhouse?
He.
He was the...
He's the skeevy guy.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
And he's the pothead in Cabin in the Woods.
Right, right. He was the tech guy in Dollhouse.
He is the lead. And
I like him.
Allison Hannigan plays his best friend who's working at a comic shop / video store that doesn't exist but feels like it could exist in California.
Yeah.
She is on the phone with him. So he is a camp counselor. And he calls, in the opening bits, he calls her because... He is in the midst of a camp count, a slasher movie. He's like, yeah. He's like, they killed. He's like, this guy killed a bunch of people, and I'm on the run. And he's calling his friend, and she's like, why don't you call the police? She's like, I can't get through the police. I left a voicemail for the sheriff. And so he's like talking to his friend, and they're talking through horror tropes and that kind of thing. It's a horror comedy, and it very quickly becomes clear. I mean, I want to say in the first like 10-15 minutes, the Franz Kranz is the killer, and he doesn't know it because. There's like this evil mask that he found that somehow got put on him, and it turns him into a slasher when he wears the mask. So he is out there killing people and not remembering he's done it.
When did this movie come out?
A couple years ago. Okay. I want to say maybe 2016, 2017, like that.
That sounds like a fun premise, and I like that dude. Is it saying good?
It's a fun premise. It's really fun. Yeah, it's got some clever meta stuff about the serial killer genre.
Mm-hmm.
Allison Hannigan and Franz Kranz, I believe, were never in the same room, which is impressive because they've got great chemistry, even though they're not actually talking to each other. She is the like nerd girl who knows all this stuff, and there's a really funny bit because she's talking on the phone with her friend. She's like, "Well, are you covered in blood?" She's like, well, what about the hand? And she looks around, there's customers looking at her. She's like, my niece is in a play. And and as it goes on, there's someone who's like, hey, your friend's a killer. And she's like, I wasn't talking to you.
She feels very How I Met Your Mother, Allison Hannigan.
Yeah, yeah. It is very
How
much
I Met
that.
Your Killer.
Yeah. It's super fun. I was really glad I watched it. There's some nice twists and turns. Some good sort of meta. In the same way, like, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon is about yep. sort of the elements of being a slasher and that kind of thing. It works really well. It's really fun. I would definitely recommend this to people who like horror comedy stuff.
But only if you have Spectrum Cable, apparently.
Spectrum Cable, or, I mean, it's a $10 DVD. It was worth the $10.
I went to buy the digital. You can't buy the digital.
You can't even buy it digitally, no.
Which that's is
why,
stupid.
That's why I had to buy it on DVD like a caveman.
There were several movies this year I went to
look. We should all be living like men.
Men.
There were several movies this year I went to like try to find to buy.
Yeah.
You can't buy digitally.
Yeah, there's a bunch
like
that.
Why can't you buy the Peter Jackson Dead Alive?
Yeah, it's
or
crazy.
Whatever.
It's crazy that everything's
Brain Dead, Dead
Brain
Alive.
Dead, Dead Alive.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. But yeah, it's
you
like
can't buy it.
This guy is like created like the most famous one of the most famous modern
yeah.
epics trilogies that there exist.
Yep.
And it's like, and you won't sell me his
yeah.
stuff? Like you're like, don't
why
you want to make
hiding it?
Don't
yeah.
you want to make the money?
Yep.
And they're weird. Like, well, we don't want anybody to know he did something untoward. that movie is crazy and gross and funny. It is a good movie, but. I'm like, that's his career, man. Yeah. Just sell that shit.
Dave, you want to talk about Carnival of Souls?
Carnival of Souls, yeah. This is a movie... I watched several movies with a friend the other night, and I had never seen this one. It's a 60s movie, 1962, I think.
Okay.
And it's a nice, lean, hour and 19-minute horror movie. One of these get-in-and-get-out sort of things.
Okay.
And what really stood out for me, maybe above all else in this, it was a very good movie. I liked it quite a bit, with maybe one or two caveats, but was the atmosphere. It has a very eerie atmosphere throughout, and I especially think that somebody seeing it back in the day would have been freaked the F out. It is not like scary in the intense way modern movies are scary, of course. But it is eerie and aware in a very kind of get-under-your-skin sort of way. And the way it starts is there's, like, a couple of, like, kids who are, like... I say kids, like teenagers, or maybe, like, late teens, who are at a stoplight, and they... somebody, like, next to them wants to drag race with them. And it's, like, small-town stuff. They end up doing it, and there's a... they get onto a rickety bridge after a turn or two, and one of the cars goes off the side because it's also rickety, and they plummet into the river...
I'm led to believe this is a thing that happened all the time in the 50s.
It seems
by every song I ever heard.
And Rebel Without a Cause.
And Rebel Without a Cause.
And the song Dead Man's Curve.
Yeah, Dead Man's Curve. Seriously, it was like, that was a thing, it was like an epidemic in the 50s, apparently.
They were not ready for the sudden rise of youth culture. And kids got cars for the first time, I think. Yeah. It was always sort of a parental thing.
Do you think that actually, did it actually happen, or was this like one of those, is this like the Tide Pods of the 50s? Like they heard of one story.
I bet it's hugely exaggerated.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
But probably there were, just as like we have like people doing crazy drag races and thinking they're Fast and Furious, and
that's true.
Literally somebody died in Austin a few months ago or whatever.
That's
from
true.
That.
That's true.
So it probably semi-happened.
Yeah.
But they think that they're not going to be able to find the bodies because the river is so deep. But then the blonde woman who we saw was one of the passengers in the car. She kind of shows up on the banks, and she's disheveled and confused, but seems okay. And she ends up leaving the town to try and go and pursue, to kind of get away from that dark, bad memory. And along the way to the new town she goes to, which is still a small-ish town, she sees the Carnival of the Tidal, an old, dilapidated, like, amusement park that's, like, set off. It's, like, literally in the middle of nowhere. It's some of the eeriest just photo imagery of, like, a spooky building or something.
Is this black and white?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it very much felt like sort of my aesthetic, I feel like, and lots of lonely roads and spooky countrysides. And
any lighthouses?
No lighthouses, per se.
So, 4 stars.
But she does also see, there's these moments where she sees these, like, ghoulish faces in mirrors and windows and things like that. And at times they almost, like, pursue her, and at times it's just, like, a sudden image, and then she looks again, and they're kind of gone.
Is it jump scary, or is it not quite
no,
that?
No, they just didn't do jump scares in the 60s. That makes sense. Not like that, anyway.
Oh, I mean, Psycho has jump scares.
Like, maybe one big jump scare.
One notable one.
But, yeah, like it doesn't have the kind of really taut suspense Hitchcock was great at.
Okay.
Like, I can't put it in the Hitchcock category of quality.
It's more ethereal.
It's more ethereal, for sure.
Okay.
And then there is, when she's in town, there's an element that feels, like, very modern, and I'm sure especially in the 60s did, where you kind of see her trying to get her life back going again. She's weirdly plays the organ in the church, but she's not religious herself, which was kind of a weird thing to have somebody proclaim about themselves at the time. Mm-hmm. By the way, there's an organ score for the whole thing, and it's all kind of eerie and spooky. But you see her trying to navigate this creepy next-door neighbor who's hitting on her. Lots of guys who are kind of trying to control her life. And it culminates, at the carnival, these things chasing her down. I don't want to quite say what the ending was. I feel like you want to go ahead and experience it for yourself.
We know, because Dave just told us.
I told y'all off air.
And it's a good ending. It's a good thing.
And it's the kind of ending that you'll be like, oh, you can see how there is a deeper level on which it's like, oh... The people kind of trying to control her life, what would you do to get away from that? And what I told y'all about is what happens.
Is this directed by anybody notable, or is this kind of its own thing?
His name is Herc Harvey.
Herc Harvey?
I have no idea. I know nothing of the history of the movie, other than I think it's pretty well known.
So just looking at his, like, list of things that he did, he did a lot of weird, like, info things, like, why study home economics? What about drinking?
Oh, wow.
What about Prejudice?
Yeah, I did look him up, and so, I briefly saw that he was, like, a maker originally of educational films, and I was like, what led him to make a spooky-ass movie?
Is this a cautionary tale about drag racing that became a spooky movie?
I feel like it's more of, like, an advocacy for, like, for women in the early 60s, something that maybe he wanted to say, but you couldn't put in a, an educational film that would be like too, they'd be like, this has got to be family friendly. We need to have some more stories about women's place in the home.
Yep.
But he did do like a movie called The Day After, which sort of rings a bell.
The Day After?
Not The Day After in the 80s.
I believe it is The Day After.
Oh, wow.
That's an extremely famous movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know about this, Nick?
I don't actually.
This was a movie that traumatized all kinds of kids.
Just in brief, it showed a nuclear war and the people who tried to live afterwards with Jason Robards.
Why did that come up to him? Because that didn't...
Is it not him?
It's not him, but it shows up. Does he, like,
is there, like, just another name or something in it? Oh, okay. Yeah.
He starred in it.
but anyway, even if it's just like kind of its own standalone weird thing, I'd say it's well worth seeing.
Right.
And, doesn't fit into any of the obvious molds. It's not like a Universal Monsters movie.
Right.
It's not like a Hammer horror movie with like cheesy fake blood. It's like an eerie, moody piece that I think has some interesting subversive ideas. And I don't think it's quite on the great level, but it's pretty dang good.
That's Carnival of Souls.
Carnival of Souls.
All right. Nick and Dave, y'all saw Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes.
Feel free to spoil whatever you want. There's no way I'm seeing this movie.
You know what? If Randy's kids were younger, I would see it with them. Yeah.
Neither of my kids has any interest in Five Nights at Freddy's.
But look,
I don't need to see it.
It's a solid movie.
It is.
It has been interesting to watch people kind of drag it.
Did you go see it in theaters?
Yes.
Okay. I watched it on Peacock.
And I don't know that I got a particular sense of the audience overall, but I know it is, like, just on a purely monetary level, the biggest opening Blumhouse ever had. For a Blumhouse movie, and it's like, I think it's like Oppenheimer level initial box office.
Well, I think it cost like all in like $40 million to make, and it's made like globally at least $140 million.
Something like that. It's
made its budget back completely. This was a weird Warner Brothers movie that they basically said no and kicked it down.
Oh, really?
To the curb, and Jason Blum was like, "You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and take that from you."
There's a reason he's in charge of the studio.
He's smart. He is very smart.
Remind me, I think their biggest, like, really good movie was like Get Out. Like, didn't they produce Get Out?
They did.
Like that?
I think you're right, but. It feels like there may have been some weird like indie thing that struck first for them or something.
Right, but that's like a huge like great movie success.
Yeah,
and then here you have a commercial success. And by the way, for those who don't know about it, because I was telling Father about it the other day, and he's like, "What's Five Nights at Freddy's? I've never heard of it in my life."
I mean, that makes sense.
And I'm like, anybody who's got, I think, kids who are they might be teens or 20s now, but. Maybe starting 10, 12 years ago or something like that, there was a series of games that I think targeted as young as tweens, but were kind of teenage horror video games.
Yep.
Set at like a spooky Chuck E. Cheese is the quickest way to say it. It was clearly modeled on that, where the animatronic like animals and stuff that would, you know, you would see at the pizza place come to life at night, and they scare people and they kill people. And it turns out they've added lots and lots of lore on over the course of 6 games. And it's a little convoluted, but it's pretty interesting. And so the movie sought to, because I know it's written by the dude who created the series, sought to kind of like bring in a lot of that while at the same time, you know, streamlining it and stuff. Kind of the way Marvel movies do.
It's still a little convoluted.
It's still a little convoluted.
It's still a little long.
Yep.
But I will
and
say,
it's also not like super scary.
No, they're
it's like, actually not particularly scary at all. It's
there are instances of like brutality and. Gruesomeness that I wasn't expecting from it.
Occasionally, yeah.
And the overall story
But it's never, like, real intense. Like, say, compared to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which had some real scares in it.
No, it's not that intense. But I will say that the story is a little more adult-oriented than I was expecting.
Yeah, so the lead is a dude who's, what is he, like 20?
Yeah, it's played by Josh Hutcherson, who played PETA in Hunger Games.
Oh, that's who that is. To me, he had the same kind of not really impressive mustache that, who's the Mandalorian?
Pedro Pascal.
That Pedro Pascal does. He looked like a young Pedro Pascal, and he is living on his own, barely scraping by because he's got some sort of PTSD-ish issues related to, we will find out, to his little brother who was kidnapped when he was younger, and he feels responsible for it. He was supposed to be watching over him, and he missed it when it happened.
Yep.
And he's now raising his sister, his little sister, who's like 10?
Because their father...
Mother
mother died.
Died, and father couldn't left. Deal with things, and he just ran out.
Yep.
So, yeah, he's raising his sister. He's struggling. He can't keep work. He also has, like, some anger issues, or, like, paranoia anger issues.
You see, stemming from.
Yeah, you see that he's like a mall cop in the beginning, and he sees somebody just being kind of a little rough with their kid, like, we're going home right now, grabbing his arm or something.
Well, he assumed it was somebody, like, trying to kidnap a kid.
And then he, like, beat the hell out of the dude.
Yeah.
But in the end, he's talking to Matthew Lillard,
yep.
who is, not at the end of the movie, but after that, who's
job placement
dude, and he's kind of skeevy. You can tell he's kind of probably got something up his sleeve, and he's like, well, there's not much we can hire you for, given your record, and you can't keep a job down, but he's like, they're looking for a security guard at this place. It's an old derelict place where there were, some murders?
Well, they don't even get into that. He said the owner doesn't want to, take the wrecking ball to it. Because
but, why did it shut down?
He doesn't tell him. It just is one of those things that's just past its prime. It's not until he gets there that a police officer sort of kind of fills him in a little bit on the back history of the Chuck E. Cheese knockoff place.
Right.
And filled with killer animatronics.
Yep. But it's not like they're they don't have a big high body count. Right?
No, there is a high body count, but not exactly for the reason of the animatronics.
Right. But he gets his security job there. He has to work overnight and balance it with taking care of the little girl. There's an interesting subplot around some other people who are interested in it. Yep. That relates to, I thought that was kind of a neat little way to work in some more victims, to be honest.
Yeah.
The person who's babysitting for him, who's doing it, gratis, right?
Yeah.
And seems like a halfway decent person early on, is like, oh, I'm just trying to help out this family in need.
Maybe not so
no,
much.
No, she's, scoping him out for his skeevy, was it his aunt. Sister-in-law?
No, because it's his mom's sister.
His aunt. Yeah, that's right. What did she want out of it?
Basically, she wanted the government paycheck for taking care of the girl.
Right, and so she wants him to lose him, and so the babysitter's there to
take
him.
Played by Mary Stuart Masterson, I will say.
I feel like I should know. I know that name, but I don't know
She's
her.
Been in a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. She was one of the leads.
Yeah, she was.
So the babysitter's supposed to be digging up dirt and stuff to use against him, but later on, working with, some guys, they're like, just get him fired and stuff like that. So they're going to go in and, trash the Chuck E. Cheese place, Freddy's, and it doesn't go well for him.
Freddy does not like that.
Yeah. Now, this was well into the movie, though, that happens.
Yeah.
It's not like eerie things happen, sort of, and he sometimes sees some movement, but it's not like they're coming to life all the time. But at the same time, I don't think the movie holds out too long.
No. And I will say, the effects the animatronics are great.
Yep, they look like what I know of the video games.
But they move in that kind of lumbering, awkward.
They're kind of spooky and funny at the same time,
yeah.
Because they have, kind of weird Garfield-like plastered faces on them. There's a weird thing where his little sister kind of bonds with them at
mm-hmm.
some point and is, talking to them. And you're like, oh, they actually do seem kind of okay. And then you're like, oh, but wait, are they inhabited by the spirits of dead children? Maybe so. And that, I know
there's
all the
a
video
level
game
to it that I was a little surprised that it's not just inhabited by the ghosts of,
right.
They're literally that, their corpses are in the animatronics.
Right, right.
It's very dark for a child.
Yep.
I was like, this is made for 10-year-olds? What the hell?
Well, I think because they made it so that there's not, big jolts that will, big jump scares, but it's, they wanted to keep to the game's macabre nature. So, the story is pretty macabre. It's just, you're not going to be jumping out of your seat all the time. But little kids would probably be uncomfortable. But I think, an 8-year-old who's, or a 9-year-old who's not too squeamish would probably be okay with it. And, 10- and 12-year-old kids might even be like, there should have been more guts.
And if you've ever wanted to see a killer animatronic cupcake.
That's true. I
did not expect that.
I was not familiar with this little thing, but it was, the most scary of them in some ways.
The big duck carries around a cupcake, and the cupcake likes to murder people.
Yeah, and the cupcake can get in ventilations and shafts and stuff.
Yeah, it
like
can get into the small spots.
Now, here's what I thought was like wrong with the not wrong with the movie, but kind of weaker about it. I did think it needed a little bit more scares, but I also thought it needed a little more like oomph in the laugh department. Like the dialogue could have been punched up to be a little more fun at times because the story is a little morose.
It is. I honestly think the whole movie is a little morose. It's a little dark, but I still think it's worth a watch.
I think so too. I kind of liked the story of it all, the even convoluted and all that. Because at its heart, it is a neat idea. And like probably every kid has like kids, at least when you're a teenager maybe, or you're 12 or 13, and you're at a Chuck E. Cheese, you start imagining, oh, what if these things came out at night? Yeah. Well, what if they were killers or whatever? And this is a pretty neat version of that what if.
I mean, I spent some time in Chuck E. Cheese's.
I did as well.
Kinda, you grow up in that era, that was a place where people had birthdays.
Right,
well,
and yet
we've all been to the Chuck E. Cheese.
And yet it's so surreal. There is some fun to be had in like their training video for it. He has like a training video from the 1980s.
Did you catch who was the person in the training video?
God, I forgot.
It's Heather Langenkamp.
Oh, that's amazing. From Nightmare.
Yeah. It was nice to see her show back up and kind of the spookier.
She'd be like in her 50s or something.
She was
now?
In the midnight. She was the basically who ran the place in Flanagan's midnight.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't?
I saw
okay.
one episode.
Oh, okay.
I actually have been thinking about going back to it. I know it's not like his most beloved one, but I kind of wanted to revisit it.
Yeah, you shouldn't leave any Flanagan unwatched.
Probably true. And it's got like Juno from
Hill.
Usher.
I keep wanting to say Hill House.
Yeah.
And I also really like Matthew Lillard. I like Matthew Lillard. I like his over the top nature.
I'm overtly not a Matthew Lillard fan, except for Scream is a great movie. And so I have to give him that, even though he's a total spaz in it.
Yeah.
But
that's his character.
That's his character, and I really haven't seen him in much else, but he's good in this.
He is.
He is given some good material to work with, I think.
I will say the last like 15 minutes of this is pretty solid. It has a good ending, I feel like.
Yeah.
The
cop lady character felt a little bit, I was a little bit confused by her motivation at times. That felt like one of those things that was like, oh, this is where the game was a little confusing or something.
Her, like, why she didn't reveal certain things, I know she was skirting a line.
Yep.
And for a reason, but I was also like, it's a little weird.
Yep. yes, I'm going to give it the slightly cautious recommendation.
Well, you could add to its box office winnings.
Yep.
Because this thing is kicking ass.
Yep. Yep.
Or you could watch it on Peacock, which apparently not many people have, but it's a worthwhile streaming service to have.
Yep.
I have found a lot to like on the Peacock.
It's got Quantum Leap.
Which I need to go back and finish. The last episode of season one.
Season two is like 3 or 4 episodes in now.
Five Nights at Quantum Leap.
Nick, you're going to talk about some movies, one I hate, one I haven't seen, and one I love.
Oh,
which one do you hate?
The one you're about to, the one we'll probably talk about first.
Okay.
I know which one
it is. We watched it together, and I hated it.
So here's the thing I have to say about this movie, because it rose in my esteem quite a bit. Knowing the animal that you're about to watch makes all the difference.
I mean, I believe that.
It is such a fun romp if you kind of know what you're getting into. Because
movie,
it is such, is Malignant.
It's Malignant.
James Wan's weird
tribute to now, Italian horror.
Yeah,
now, we but, came in... I want to set the scene a little bit for why I hate this. We came in on this. James Wan has done The Conjuring? Is that his stuff?
Yeah, so he did The Conjuring, Insidious, the first Saw, which is a good movie.
It is a good movie.
I've seen Insidious. So I'd seen Insidious and The Conjuring, and I was like, oh, a new thing from James Wan. It's going to be like Insidious or Conjuring. Malignant is definitely not that.
No, but it is more in line with his original, his first movie, Dead Silence.
Which I've never seen.
Right, which is kind of, there's a certain over-the-topness, and I would say at times when you're watching it, you're going to be like, it's almost like the acting is bad.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I've seen him direct other movies, and he does not elicit bad performances.
He's correct.
Working with Lee Whannell often, he gets some good stuff. And but he, you know, like I said, I think he was meaning to catch this heightened Italian horror movie style of like the 70s, with also the gore and sort of some unpredictability.
And like the scenery and the backdrops. Like the police station is like so over the top, like, right, gothic.
It's cavernous.
Cavernous.
Yeah. It's cavernous.
This movie's insane.
Her home's attic has a giant, like, wind turbine in it, and I was just like, so, this is amazing.
Yes, I found it was very fun to let myself laugh at.
Yeah.
This is a funny horror movie, even when it's, I think when it's not in, when it seems serious, that I think it's still meant to be kind of funny.
I mean, it's dark, because the main character, which, she is a woman who's had several miscarriages. She's married to an abusive husband who literally smashes her head into a wall and awakens something inside her.
Right. She's
that
got
was
this, like,
thought long dormant.
Right. And so, the course of the movie follows it that where something gets into their house.
Yep.
And some of these scenes are pretty scary, by the way, even though this is over the top, and it kills him. And then there's, like, she realizes she's got, like, a link to the killer. Because she goes into these dreamlike states.
Yeah, she basically will freeze at certain times, and the world around her will melt away, revealing a scene of somebody
she
getting
could be
murdered.
In her kitchen, and then suddenly she kind of has one of these visions, she slumps down, and she's had, like, somewhere else in the city where the killing is happening. And so we know early on that there's a link, but the specifics don't come out until later, and they're bonkers.
They are bonkers. The police station sequence, which happens about, like, I think there's like 30 minutes to go at that point. And from there, it's just whole hog insanity. And I love it.
It becomes almost a different movie in its last act, and it's amazing. And also, I will say that
the effects of Gabriel,
the point at which, by the way, Nick, somebody falls through a ceiling. If you know the scene I'm talking about, I think where the movie starts going into great WTF territory.
Yep. Well, Gabriel and the effect of sort of this backwards creature.
Yes.
That's like their entire body is backwards. It's just very strange to watch a person be that athletic and that, like, kind of, like,
this sort of, the killer that emerges in this is like a flipping, wall-clinging, fire-escape-climbing, murderous, spindly thing.
Yes.
And yet it almost looks like,
I really expected this to be a really good Halloween costume, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody replicate
it. I've definitely seen people wear this.
Oh, have you? Oh, okay,
I
have not.
To go to, like, a horror convention.
I mean, not in person. I've seen it online.
I haven't even seen pictures of that. I'm like, that the face is so grotesque.
We'll have to Google it later. Yeah.
Anyways, I really suggest watching this. Just go in with no expectations.
Go in knowing that
it's bonkers.
Insane.
It's kind of hokey.
Right. It's a little hokey.
It is not Conjuring. It is not Insidious. It is
Dead Silence.
It is Dead Silence, and it's just a little strange.
Yes.
But it is wonderful.
And also, I went to Seattle recently, and I went to the actual Seattle Underground, and I was chased by Gabriel, so I feel a kinship with them.
That happens.
Please don't kill me.
you should have screamed, "Time to cut out the cancer."
That's how you ward them off. It's like a cross for vampires. Nick, what were the other movies you watched?
And then I watched, I'll start with The Nun 2, which just got thrown on HBO Max.
This is from the expanded Conjuring universe, which I would say is historically not the strongest movies.
I like The Conjuring, like The Conjuring 2. And I have not seen most of the rest of them.
Annabelle is not great.
Mostly on Dave's recommendations, not seen.
Annabelle Creation is, eh. Annabelle Comes Home?
I like Annabelle Comes Home because it's an odd one that's not really just about the doll.
Correct.
It is a. It's almost a goosebump story.
Yeah, it
is. But like a slightly more edgy goosebump story.
The Nun was okay. The first one.
Okay.
The first one was okay. It wasn't great.
I'd probably agree with
better
that.
Than Annabelle.
Yeah.
Better than the second Annabelle.
And by the way, that character was introduced in Conjuring 2.
Yes.
It was a scary painting.
Yes, it was. Its name is Valak, which is like one of the fallen angels that fell with Lucifer, and it likes to torture religious people because, you know, for fun.
He's a sub-boss.
For funsies. They're a sub-boss. I always thought it was a like female, but let's just say it's a demon, androgynous kind of. It could be whatever. It's the first one had Tasia Farmiga and a couple other people. The sequel has her again, which was a nice little thing. There's a few other characters that show back up. But it's about her and another nun sort of going after Valak, who is kind of doing a murderer's row through Europe, killing, searching for something. It's a little larger than life than what we expect for, like, The Conjuring, which have always kind of been smaller films. But it's solid. It's a lot of jump scares, which I feel like it's bread and butter.
That's the bread and butter of, like, your average sort of pop horror movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, it's funny, like, I think, like, some horror nerds, and this is me sometimes, too, are like, jump scares are cheap shit. It doesn't mean that, like, good directors don't use them, too, but it's like, the people who lean into it, it's usually cheap. But a friend of mine a few weeks ago, or a few... God, when did that movie, what's the one, Smile?
Yeah.
Smile was, like, last year, I guess. She saw that a little bit after it came out, and she was like, that was amazing. It's what I want in a horror movie. And it was just like, because it was just like, jump scare after jump scare after jump scare after jump scare.
Yeah, that was.
So some people do dig it.
Yeah. I think a jump scare can be earned really, really well. I think James Wan usually does a pretty good job with earning those moments.
Yeah. I can think of scenes in Insidious and stuff like that. Like,
but he also likes to do false scares, which I love.
Yeah. There's something that kind of makes me laugh about them, and it's done right. It's a good time.
I think this is a good movie to watch, and then you're going to instantly forget it because there's not a lot of meat on the bones. There's some cool moments. There is one scene which, unfortunately, they show in the trailer.
Is this at the newsstand?
Yeah, that I think is a fantastic visual piece.
A bunch of pages of magazines and newspapers and stuff are flipping in the wind, and it seems like they sort of form a mosaic of images, and, like, the image of the nun sort of forms in their flipping pages.
It's not as good as the painting from The Conjuring,
no.
But it is visually good.
That scene, one scene in The Conjuring, is probably better than all the nun movies.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
It is an amazing, like, 2 or 3 minutes of suspense in, like, just an art studio or whatever, and with a creepy painting.
But it never dawned on me, and I haven't looked it up because I don't know, but The Nun, which takes place, like, in the 50s, I want to say, or maybe 60s, or
something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere in there, is played by Tasia Farmiga, which Vera Farmiga is the Warren. I'd like to imagine that the lineage is like from that nun is Vera Farmiga's the Warren's mother. Our great-grandmother or something.
That may be what they're ultimately setting up.
I thought that would have been a cool idea, because that's why Valak was so...
On the other hand, I don't want the Conjuring movies to be tainted by the expanded universe creeping back into
it. But here's the thing. The Conjuring movies have gone downhill.
Well, what are they on?
I think they're on four? Three... It was Conjuring 3 was the last one. It was bad.
Was Conjuring 3... Yeah, which one had one this year? Was it Conjuring...
Was Conjuring 3 something like with the devil?
Yeah, the devil made me do it.
I thought it was like Insidious that had the new one that came out.
No, the Insidious 5, that
Insidious,
did come out.
Okay. And that was also disappointing, I think, right?
It was okay. Yeah. It was a solid finale.
But okay is disappointing when all the other ones have been so good.
Yeah, but this was Patrick Wilson directing, and it was just okay. The last Conjuring movie was outright bad.
Yeah.
And that was really... upsetting, because that's such a good series of films, even though they're based on trash people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Nick, are you going to see Nun 3 if that happens?
Yeah, sure.
When that happens?
I mean, I won't go see it in the theater, but I'll watch it when it comes
Nun
to...
Nun 3
like,
Tokyo Drift.
Yes, Nun 3 Tokyo Drift.
Nun 3, none shall pass.
And then the last movie I saw, which I know you all love, is The Barbarian.
You've seen it before, right?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Or just Barbarian.
Or Barbarian. I saw this in... movie theaters, having watched no trailers, knew nothing about it other than the barest sliver of knowledge.
Yeah, this was like my favorite viewing experience of last year.
It may be my favorite horror movie the last few years.
I like it because it's a
even
little...
Even the name doesn't give anything away.
No, doesn't give anything away.
It's a little strange, it's a little funny, it's a little gross.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But I think we've mentioned before that the basic premise, it just kicks off with a mistaken Airbnb.
Yeah, two people have basically double rented booked. Double booked the same place.
And this woman who, like, in the middle of, like, a nasty rainy night in a city she doesn't know anything about, and, like, in, like, kind of a not-so-good neighborhood.
But she doesn't know that because she came in the rain, she can't see it.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, that reveal is great.
Yeah, that reveal is great.
She's wanting to, basically there's a dude already there, and he's like, well, you know, while we can get it figured out tomorrow, if you just want to stay here for the night, you know, I'll sleep on the couch. He seems to be quite a gentleman about it, but you're also like, is this some creepy, you know, you're watching a horror movie, so you're like, well, is this like a trap he's set up? Or is he okay? Is she a killer?
And also kind of meta a little bit, they cast Bill Skarsgård, who plays Pennywise. And that is a nice little nod, because you instantly distrust the man.
Yep.
But honestly, their chemistry and the kind of meet cute that they have in that first, like, 25 minutes is really good and sells the movie.
If the movie had been only that eerie story, it probably still could have been a pretty good movie. Because those scenes are pretty suspenseful.
Yeah.
That thing where she wakes up in the middle of the night, very scary.
Yeah. Yep. And finds her door unlocked.
Yeah,
it's like him, like, screaming on the couch.
Yep. That's right. What does he have, like a medical issue or night terrors? Yeah. And then there is a point in this movie in which it hits a swerve.
Yes.
And
Justin Long comes in.
I believe we've talked about it before, but I don't want to, like, spoil it for anybody, because I think it's such a fun one to see.
But Justin Long is amazing.
He is. He is. That guy has a solid horror movie track record.
He does. I mean, but he started in Jeepers Creepers.
Yep, and he's now in... You liked Goosebumps, right? Isn't he in that?
Yeah, he's great in Goosebumps.
The new Disney Plus show thing?
Yeah.
But
this is on Hulu. It's on Max. It's worth watching. Watch it tonight as a kind of farewell to Halloween. You will have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Seriously, my favorite horror movie the last few years. It's really good. All right. I would like to diverge and talk about Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
Not the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
This is not a movie.
I talk about the PlayStation 5 game, which got me to buy a PlayStation 5, because the original Spider-Man game, which came out a few years back, was one of my favorite Spider-Man stories ever.
Yep.
And you're just talking about, like, just the actual narrative story.
The game is great. The game is very inspired by Batman Arkham City, and you get all these combos, and you build, like...
upgrade moves
and all that. There's takedown sequences, like... But it is... not just like a Batman reskinned. It is if you were Spider-Man, in the same way that Arkham City is like, oh, that's what Batman is like.
Find all the cool things about Batman. This was find all the cool things about Spider-Man.
And the story was interesting. It's an adult Peter who has a degree in biophysics, I think, and he is working in a lab with Otto Octavius, who is like his mentor. They are funded by Norman Osborn. At this point, there's no Green Goblin. There's no Doc Ock. But he has been Spider-Man for a while.
Yeah.
And the first game, you will see Otto Octavius get corrupted and become Doc Ock because of Norman Osborn's sort of greed and his own. But Norman never becomes Green Goblin. But they used Mr. Negative, from the Dan Slott run, as a major villain, and in doing so, they introduced Miles Morales.
You know, that's why I thought Dan Slott wrote it, because I was like, who else would use Mr. Negative?
They used elements. Christos Gage, who co-wrote.
right.
Probably co-created. There's a big thing. There's over the course of that first game, the Sinister Six forms. Mm-hmm. He has to fight them at the raft. You get to, like, web-swing all the city. There's a big story. Mary Jane is a reporter in this for the Daily Bugle, so she's a much more active character. Much less bombshell model that she was in, like, McFarlane era that I read, and more like Girl Next Door that you think of, a little closer to the Spider-Man movie version.
Yeah. Right. Some people don't like that. They're like, MJ is eye candy.
Yeah. No, MJ as a reporter is great, and you get to play her in stealth missions that some people loathe.
Right. But you know what? I saw one or two articles on that, and then I looked at the comments, and everybody was like, this article is off, the stealth moments are really good, it's a great game.
It's great fun. If you're only playing because you want to kick ass as Spider-Man, then yeah, you're going to be bored, but in the first game, you get to play Miles Morales as Miles Morales before he gets bit by the spider.
Oh, that's cool.
And you get to play MJ, and there's like stealth element stuff. Also, there Aunt May runs Feast, the sort of shelter, and that is owned by Martin Lee, a.k.a. Mr. Negative. I won't give one of the big twists, but there's a big emotional thing that happens at the end of the first game. And then they, and then also there's a sort of post-credit where Miles gets bit by a spider.
Yep.
And then they did a Miles Morales sort of, it was a standalone game, but it was essentially DLC length, and you played as Miles, and they did a riff on, not the Prowler, but like, oh, the Tinkerer.
Oh, interesting.
And they introduced Genki, and they gave him a girlfriend who is deaf,
mm-hmm.
And the sort of thing. And so, now a few years later, Spider-Man 2 comes out, and Miles is Spider-Man, Pete is Spider-Man, Pete is now living in Aunt May's home in Queens.
In the first game, did Miles and Pete like hang out?
No,
so didn't really see him interact.
No, so in the Miles Morales game, Pete knows that he's Spider-Man and has just sort of trained him, but Pete and MJ have gone off to Simcaria for a reporting job that MJ's doing.
Simcaria, that's
because Silver Sable's in the DLC.
Silver Sable territory,
and Black Cat is also in the DLC, as was Hammerhead.
Huh.
And so they were off doing Simcaria stuff. So Miles had to be the solo Spider-Man in his thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time you've seen them together.
Yeah.
And this is, you alternate between playing both of them. You level them both up. You level their skills up separately. They each have different skills, different roles. Pete has brought in technology stuff. One of the opening sequence of this is a kaiju-sized Sandman is attacking Manhattan. And you have to go in as Miles and Pete and fight him. And Pete has been like upgrading some of the tech.
Mm-hmm.
And Miles is like, you're gonna have to deploy it, and so he has like web wings,
mm-hmm.
so you can like pluck out your web wings and fly, like cool. around the city. And he also has the spider, the like iron spider things, you know, like those
the tendrils,
things you can fight with. Whereas Miles has electrical powers and cloaking and all that stuff. And in the course of this story, they use Kraven as one of the Kraven is sort of the spine of the bad guys. He is coming to Manhattan with his group called the Hunters. It's all these people who are a lot of Australian for some reason.
Sure.
And they are basically hunters, and they are gathering up supervillains and reformed supervillains for a great hunt.
Okay.
And they're using, they have these like jump jet type things that they come in on, and they use machetes and all this kind of stuff. So you're fighting them. That's one of the groups you'll fight. There's also this Cult of the Flame that's going around doing things. That ties into a character from the first game. If y'all remember the Wraith from the 90s, or maybe a Peter David era Spider-Man?
No.
Sort of a vigilante. they repurposed the Wraith as a character in this. And then early on, Kraven breaks out Mr. Negative, who is the guy who basically killed Miles' dad in the first game, by blowing up City Hall.
Yeah.
And the Scorpion. And basically Kraven captures both of them. And so Miles is, like, wanting to recapture Martin Lee, who killed his dad. And Pete is dealing with the stuff with Kraven and that kind of stuff. But also, Harry Osborn has come back in the picture. And Harry was dying of a genetic disease that his mom died of. And he seems to be cured. They used this black goo to cure him.
Sure.
Dr. Kirk Connors gave him this black goo. Okay. Of course, it turns out this black goo is a symbiote. And at some point, it goes on to Spidey to save his life, and Spidey does the whole black costume saga where he starts acting not like Spider-Man.
Realize this is the ultimate version of the symbiote, or at least drawn from that.
But, so they're drawing from the Venom story, the black costume saga, the ultimate versions of that. Kraven's Last Hunt is definitely in there.
Yep.
There's a big fight with the Lizard, and they're taking on the Lizard is really cool.
And by chance, they don't have Vermin, do they?
Vermin does not make it in the game.
That's too bad. That'd be nice, but...
But there's a lot of cool, like, references. Their Manhattan is huge. Like, you can swing over. You can swing past Avengers Tower. There's all kinds of cool little Easter eggs, that kind of thing. Spider-Man has an app that he uses to for people to report crimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's...
That's a neat thing that they do that during Superior Spider-Man?
They did, yeah.
Yeah, it's a neat idea.
So it's a very good game, and in amongst it, I always forget, like, their stuff with Harry and Pete is very, like, touching, and, like, their high school relationship is very believable. The relationship between Peter and Mary Jane, the relationship between Peter and Miles, like, all these relationships are really strong. It's great writing.
It's nice when, like, you said that's Harry Osborn you were mentioning?
Yeah.
When, you know, because a lot of times, you know, in the same way that MJ can be just the girlfriend, Harry Osborn can be just the best friend who goes wrong.
Yeah.
And it's cool when they can either lend some poignancy to that arc, if,
for sure.
you know, by making him, like, a good character.
Yep.
Or, in some cases, like, that's not the story they're telling, that hasn't happened yet or whatever, and like it can just be like, oh, this is a story of some friends.
This is a deeply satisfying game story-wise. Also, just the gameplay's a blast.
You said you're probably closing in on the finale,
I think I'm close to the end of it, yeah. I got to the Venom stuff. Their Venom is great. You get to play, when Venom finally emerges, you get to play as Venom and just wreak havoc on Osborn security.
Yeah, that's fun.
And they do a lot of that kind of stuff. They, like I say, there's some Mary Jane stealth sequences where in this version they give her a taser, and she had some combat training from Silver Sable, so you're not quite as, if you get spotted, you die immediately.
Right.
Which is kind of fun.
Honestly, most stealth games are like that. You're not like a super badass at taking on hordes of people in Metal Gear.
Right.
You will get killed at it.
That's true.
So MJ is at least as tough as Solid Snake.
And you get, like I say, you swap between Miles and Peter. It does a very good job of sort of telling your stories. I really, really dig this game. I can already see if they're going to do a third one or wherever they might be going. I wish that whoever was writing Spider-Man in the comics had this level of affection and clarity on what Spider-Man is.
After several years of poor choices as writers, I feel like the editor of this book is to blame.
I agree. I blame Nick Lowe.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is great. If you're jonesing for some classic Spidey or just a really, really good game, it's a fantastic game.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah.
And it's got, there's all kinds of little side missions here. There's little spider drones. You know the glitchy effect from Spider-Verse?
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that, and when you go, you pick up a spider drone, you can like web it up, and it'll have like, there's a Spider-Gwen one, there's a Spider-Ham one, and Genki is trying to track it down. He's like, this is coming from like space or something. So I believe that it's coming from the Spider-Verse.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And Mysterio has reformed, and he has a series of escape room type things throughout the city that Miles can go into called Mysteriums.
Uh-huh.
They're like VR things that have gone wrong.
Oh.
So you have like to fight a bunch of VR bad guys. Tombstone has reformed and is working as a mechanic at a Coney Island go-kart race, because he was a big guy in the first
one. Yeah, he was.
So like, there's a lot of like reformed villains and a question of, there's an arc about Mr. Negative, who again blew up City Hall and killed Miles' dad, and there's a question of redemption going in there, and they really do some good questions of like, can you redeem characters? And it's deeper than what you've seen a lot of stories. There's also a ton of costumes. There's everything from, you know, Spider-Man Noir, Spider-Punk, all that kind of stuff, to original stuff.
I believe I saw a costume where you can get the Spider-Cat.
There is a Spider-Cat costume. Spider-Cat is a character. There's a guy who owns
a literal cat, or some Black Cat reference?
No, there's a Spider-Cat from Spider-Verse.
Oh, I see.
But also there's a guy who owns like a, I want to say he owns a bodega, or maybe he's homeless, and he has Spider-Cat. That's like his thing. He's one of Miles' buddies.
That's awesome.
The costumes also, Miles, if you get the Spider-Verse costume, he gets that animated style, and it all goes kind of animated around you.
Oh, that's
so neat. There's some really cool, and there's, when you're Peter or Miles, you can take photos and send them to Robbie Robertson.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat.
You get credits for that, and I have a feeling that MJ's going to wind up working for Robbie. J. Jonah Jameson is in your ear on your pod all the time. It's a really lived in world.
Does JJJ run the Bugle, or is he?
He runs the Bugle.
Okay,
but he is also like cranky podcaster guy.
Right, right. That's a good rearrangement of the chess pieces.
It is one of those things like, oh, this is kind of like Batman animated series. You're like, you guys found everything that worked,
mm-hmm.
and then added your own stuff into it. It all works really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very deep, very fun game.
It would be nice, because Spider-Man is, like, probably my favorite hero.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if the comics guys could get their cue from this.
Yeah. Honestly, Dave, you should watch, like, a playthrough of just the story stuff. It is that good.
I'd rather use this maybe as an opportunity to go and play the original, which I believe you bought for me. Yeah. But I just haven't gotten around to
it. You should play the original. It's a great game.
My
16-year-old gamer in my house is already 100% of the game and asked me what Game Plus mode is. So.
Oh, man.
He played harder than I did. But I don't play games as hard as he does, and I'm still closing in on at least the main story being done, because it's very... I think I spent all of Sunday playing this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think that wraps it up for us this week. Enjoy your spooky Halloween, and until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.